Well, welcome back to the XR Industry Leaders Podcast with Arbor XR. I am your host, Brad Scoggin, CEO and co-founder, along with my co-host, Will Stackable, CMO and also a co-founder. And today we've got a really fun interview with Dr. Christina Potter from Nicholas Children's Hospital in Miami, Florida. And they're seeing some really powerful results in pain reduction amongst children. So Dr. Christina Potter, thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And you were initially brought in back in 21 to help bring VR to Nicholas Health. Maybe tell us a little bit about that. Where did you start and what were some of the problems that you were trying to solve?
Sure. So yes, when I started at Nicholas back in, gosh, it was exactly 4 years ago now, I came on as a project manager and I was leading a grant. It was a one-year grant from the Taft Foundation. And we were looking at how we can use VR in our same-day surgery area to reduce patient anxiety before they're going in for operations. So the idea with that really was we had patients in this space who come in very early typically. So their procedures, we have a 7 a.m. start typically across the hospital. That's pretty standard across a lot of hospitals. And our same-day surgery bay, we started there because it's a pretty small unit, has 8 bays. And a lot has changed in this space since then. But at the time, the bays were, you know, small and really, really close to each other with just a curtain in between. And if you can imagine, you're a young child, you're there waiting for surgery, your anxiety is kind of, you know, spiking at that point. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not upset and crying, you can hear the patient, you know, 4 bays down, you can hear them getting, you know, anxious. So we wanted to start there because, you know, we know that pre-surgery is a very pivotal point and it can impact post-surgery outcomes. So we wanted to see, you know, can we reduce that anxiety and reduce that fear before patients are going into their surgery so that we could improve their current experience, improving the patient experience, but also improve the surgical and post-operative experience as well.
That's interesting. I did not realize that the stress level going into the procedure impacts the outcome. Very interesting. And I know one of the cool things you did early on was partnering with Stanford. Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
For sure. So when I joined Nicholas, my boss, Dr. David So, who is the SVP and Chief Innovation and Information Officer for the health system, he's really the kind of visionary behind all this work. He had already partnered with the Stanford Chariot program, and that's at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital. And they have a really well-established VR program already. Mm-hmm. So rather than kind of recreating the wheel, we were like, well, let's see if we can do kind of what they do, but at Nicholas. So we partnered with them. We actually ordered our initial set of hardware through the Stanford Chariot program. Oh, cool. And that was 6 VR Oculus Go headsets, old school headsets, and 6 Nebula projectors. And the idea with those was the projector essentially came with a clip on it. You could clip it to the patient bed. And it also came with the screen that they had created out at Stanford that you could slide the feet of the screen underneath the stretcher. So you're kind of creating like a little movie theater experience for the patients there that could be wheeled around with them. So our goal with partnering with Stanford was to see if we can use that same hardware in a Nicholas setting.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice out the gate there is, find somebody that's already done it to partner with. I'm sure there were still some challenges. I know it's not just the technology, but when you're bringing, you know, change management, et cetera, maybe tell us some of the early challenges that you faced in launching the VR program.
For sure. So I think to start, one of the original challenges was it was just me. So I was trying to get this thing started from, you know, from the ground up. Also starting at Nicholas. So I was coming in as a brand new person, trying to start a brand new program. I didn't know all of the people. So that was a pretty steep learning curve for me just off the bat, going into the space, introducing myself, trying to bring new technology to staff who are already incredibly busy and trying to get patients in on time for their operation, right? So to start out, I was the person going in and putting headsets on patients. And as it was a research trial, I was also the one consenting them into the study, collecting all of the data. And it was, you know, very resource intensive, but that was my whole job at the time. So it worked. So I guess as a piece of advice, if you're starting out a new program, make sure you've got like a full-time person dedicated to just doing that part of it, because it does take a lot of, you know, focus. From the hardware side, we did do a lot of testing of, you know, was the Oculus Go headset the one that we wanted to go with? Were the projectors and screens, you know, suitable for the types of beds that we had at Nicholas? And we had to test and, you know, change the hardware pretty quickly, actually, because we realized that certain things that worked at another institution just didn't work for us. And even beyond that, some of the areas where we wanted to test, same day surgery was fine and it worked really, really well. We were also trying to test out some things in our minor procedure suite with the projector and the screen. And because of the beds that we had, the screens kept toppling over and, you know, the staff were kind of getting frustrated. They're like, this isn't going to work. So we had to kind of pull the whole thing and take a big step back and say, all right, what's going to actually work for us? I like the concept, but we've got to modify. We have to pivot and see, you know, what's actually going to work at Nicholas with our, you know, setup, with our beds and with our staff.
You know, what I love about that story, and we hear it probably every time, and it maybe sounds simple or silly, but all the great XR use cases that we hear about almost always, if not always, start with that one person, like you said, who believes in it, who said, okay, I'm just going to go make this happen because I think that this can bring about change. So it's always fun to hear that. And just to tell you, you know, I think we all appreciate that in you and your grit to just make it happen. Maybe fast forward a little bit, over 8,000 patients and staff having gone through VR. That is not insignificant. That's awesome. Tell
those
us about
last year stats.
That's just last year. Okay. Wow. So
last year.
That's awesome. So you went from launching with, you know, a few beds and does this work and what headset and how did, you know, with the Go, like you said, to 2024, you got 8,000 people going through it. Talk about the use cases today.
Yeah, I could talk for a really long time about all of it.
That's great. That's what we're here for.
The first year, right, it was a proof of concept in one small area. I realized pretty quickly I couldn't be in every place all the time. So I started our Innovation Ambassador Program. And really, that was just empowering the folks who are there, you know, boots on the ground, who wanted to innovate, who wanted to bring this technology to their patients. And it really was just a matter of empowering them and training them on how to set up the headsets. So I started that program with 3 innovation ambassadors. Very proud to say I now have 65 innovation ambassadors across the hospital. And they're the ones doing that work every day. And I now have a staff of a couple of people, my digital innovation support technicians, who manage the devices, who make sure everything is cleaned and charged and all of that. And they're the ones kind of coordinating with all of our innovation ambassadors across the health system. And our use cases have changed tremendously. So we started out really focusing in on the patient experience, which we still do, I would say, is 90% of the focus. We've scaled the program from starting out in same-day surgery. We're now operating out of, I think, 12 different units in the hospital on a consistent basis where we have headsets there. We also have partnered with our child life team. So now each of our 12 child life experts has their own VR headset that they use in their bedside practice with our patients. So they're really, I mean, the work that they do is tremendous. They use all sorts of, they have a whole toolkit of different types of things that they use, but now they have, you know, the VR there as well. And they've all been trained up on how to use that too. And I think what's really surprised me over the last few years is just the willingness for Nicholas Children's staff to be innovative. A lot of the different programs that I can speak to have come from the staff members themselves as concepts that they would like to test, whether that's creating new VR training modules for staff or creating, you know, new use cases for them to put headsets on patients while they're getting procedures done. So not just when they're waiting, but while they're actually having a procedure done, being fully immersed and distracted during that time. And we also have a couple of other programs for, you know, staff well-being. Our nurse well-being initiative is the focus on is on putting headsets on the nurses when they're having a hard time as well. And we've provided some guided meditation and different soothing techniques for them to take them out of that stressful situation and bring them through like a guided meditation, deep relaxation, kind of breathing thing.
I know Will probably wants to get into some specifics even more so on results, but I think when you've got your staff several years in driving it forward, I mean, to me, that is just a huge, they're seeing the results, they're, you know, directly. And so everyone, myself included, likes to see the hard numbers, but that's a pretty powerful endorsement, I think, of how well it's working when you've got your staff driving it forward.
Absolutely. And it's really been because of the success in those first few units that it scaled to the other units, because the staff, you know, down the hallway were like, hey, I heard that they have VR. Can we have VR? Because I want to use it. You know, I think that my patient in, you know, the fracture care center would really benefit. And it has scaled. You know, I've been just repeatedly surprised by the different use cases that our staff come to us with. And it works. It's worked in pretty much every use case that they've come to us requesting these devices for.
Well, you make a really good point, though, and we talk about this a lot as well, the importance of that first impression. And you said that you've now scaled and every use case is working and everyone's bought in. But that was all a result of that initial use case going well and the thoughtfulness and the approach at the very beginning. It's just so important.
For anyone who's listening, who's having trouble visualizing, what does this actually look like on a day-to-day basis? Can you kind of just take us into your world? It's a Monday, you know, everybody's showing up to the office. Like, how is VR being used on a Monday at Nicholas?
It's a good question. I think it really depends on the space. So some units have dedicated devices within their space. Others will request a device. So we are, the digital innovation team that I lead is based in IT. So we have the ability for staff to request a device through our kind of IT ticketing system. So if they need a VR headset, they can raise a ticket and someone from my team will bring that headset out to them. Once they have the device, it's really, you know, the staff have been trained on how to use it. They will set up. We use primarily the Meta devices, Meta Quest 2s and 3s currently. We have tested out lots of other technology. But they'll, you know, they'll set up the headset with whatever type of game or distraction app they want their patient to use. And then they put the headset on the kid and there you go. The kid is, you know, the patient is distracted and gaming. So I think it really depends on which space we're talking about. If it's for patient distraction, it's pretty straightforward. You let them select whichever game they want to play. If it's staff training, then that will happen, you know, kind of within the cadence of that team and whatever they need to be trained up on at the time.
I think it's worth noting too. I mean, one of the stats I see, you can confirm this, Christina, but in that specific situation, it's led to a 60% reduction in anxiety and perceived pain in children. That's incredible.
Yeah, that was one of the first things that surprised me the most, I think, with the program. And that was even, you know, we were seeing those results in our first year with that Taft Foundation grant. We captured a ton of data that first year, you know, pre-surgery and post-op. And we also, with my background in academia and my focus on, you know, parent-child interactions, I was like, why don't we also ask about parent anxiety? And we saw a significant drop in parent anxiety as well, right along the 70% mark. So they're not down to a, you know, a zero on anxiety, but seeing their child relaxed and, you know, distracted has a profound effect on the parents as well, which, you know, makes sense. If you have kids, it probably makes a lot of sense.
That's not the parents putting on the VR headset. That's just the parents being more at ease because their children are more at ease.
That's right.
Which makes total sense. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, that's cool.
So we have seen some use cases with parents putting headsets on too, which I could speak to.
I'm sure. Yeah. Cool. I couldn't jump in, you know, on the action.
Can you share specific examples of how VR has improved patient experiences at Nicholas?
Of course. We have a lot of great use cases of, you know, very specific instances, I think, that really stick with me. One example was one of our patients who I believe was 8 years old, a little girl coming in. She was having a cast placed. So her first visit in, she had a broken arm. So she needed her arm, the bone reset and pins placed, and then a cast put on. So this was in our fracture care clinic. We had just started using VR in this space, and the physician who was doing the procedure, you know, put the headset on the patient, reset the bone, placed the pins, and the little girl did not cry. She only had the local anesthetic, and typically you would have to use a lot of pain medication just to kind of keep them calm. But she was doing this kind of underwater adventure at the time and was so immersed in it, she didn't cry. So much so that that physician said, okay, we're using VR all the time now, because you can imagine, you know, for the staff as well, it does take a toll. You know, if you're, you know, we're all used to working with kids at a children's hospital, but when you see that they're also in less pain and less anxious and not squirming around and fighting so much, it makes a big impact for the staff. And when that patient came back in to have the cast removed, it was the same situation. So put the headset on, remove the cast, and that physician now uses VR in her daily practice. I think another example that, gosh, I have so many examples. Another example that sticks with me is one of our psychiatrists pulled VR into her practice. Dr. Valani Capo is the psychiatrist's name. And this is one of the use cases that surprises me, because I never thought, you know, how could you use VR when you're there for therapy? But in using different applications on the headset, she said that in her experience, her patients are having more profound and quicker breakthroughs with her. So their wall is coming down faster. They're able to engage more readily and on a deeper level, because again, that anxiety is down and it's just, you know, making them feel more at ease with her.
And for anyone listening, I know sometimes I talk to people about VR and there's just a skepticism around, you know, how is this different than just watching TV? Does this really work? Is this just what has been your experience? And if you have any, I know there's hundreds of studies at this point, so you can go search them and find them. But from your personal experience, why does this work?
I think it's because of the fully immersive nature of it. So it's not a 2D thing. You're not, you know, just looking at a screen. Though we also have a bedside gaming program. We also run an immersive therapies program. All of those are designed, again, to distract and take patients out of the fact that they're in a hospital. Nobody wants to be there. You know, we want to be there as staff, but the patients don't want to be there. Their parents, you know, for a lot of folks, it's, you know, it's the worst time of their lives being there. So our goal is to kind of bring them the comfort of home, bring them that distraction. I think it works because, you know, the distraction is so immersive. And from the psychological and scientific standpoint, I can't speak to that so much, but, you know, we only have a certain amount of attention span. If your attention is solely focused in on something else that's fully immersive from your sight to sound, then your other perceptions, like your pain perception, it goes down. That's why we're seeing such profound effects on pain. And for the anxiety, again, it's because they're fully immersed in something else. They're not thinking about where they're at.
You know, I have sort of a point of reference here. It's interesting you said that. When I was a kid, I got hit by a car. That's not funny, but it's funny thinking back, because we didn't have VR back then, but my buddy brought a GameCube, and when I had to get shots in my stomach, and I would play The Simpsons, and it went from a massive ordeal they had to do every couple hours to I didn't even notice it. I was just in the game, and I was thinking how much more immersive VR is even than I was playing on a little hospital TV screen. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And thank you for sharing that. I don't want to spend too much time here but I think it is really important. Do you have any other stories of patients even early on? You know, I think sometimes we forget about how everybody wants the stats, but we've seen over and over again with XR programs that it often is just a single story or two early on of somebody being impacted that makes the difference and kind of gives you enough courage to take the risk to go further. Any other stories that come to mind, either from back in the day or more recent?
Yeah, I'm sure I'll think of a thousand stories after this podcast too. I think a couple other examples that I would give. One is our VR Drive program that we started. So we have a whole program focused on virtual reality driving. So it's not within the hospital itself, but it's part of Nicklaus Children's. And the idea with that is to train neurodiverse young adults, so individuals with autism, on how to drive. And these folks tend to have heightened levels of anxiety in general, but really around driving, a lot of them won't even get into the driving, seat of a car, because of that overriding anxiety. So we've created this whole curriculum. We bring them through, we put them in a VR simulator, and we teach them the rules of the road. And we've seen all of our students complete the program. We've helped, I think, 18 students at this point go on to get their driver's licenses. And those are, obviously they're young adults, so they're not the youngest of kids, but it's transforming their lives because it's opening up doors for them to go get jobs, to go to higher education, things like that. So we're very, very proud of our Drive program. Another example, I think, from the hospital itself, it's actually one that came to us recently and makes me a little bit emotional. It's from our palliative care, end of life care unit. And in this space, we had a patient who wanted to use the headset, but wasn't able to because he was kind of, in his last few days. So we actually set his mom up with using the VR headset, and we casted what she could see on the headset onto the screen so that he could kind of interact with her. And she was doing like a soar, like a flying game. And it was kind of one of the last ways for that mom and her son to connect. And she came to us after he passed, and she was like, thank you so much for providing us with that opportunity. Because at that time, he couldn't sit up, he couldn't, move his head in that way. So I think for me, it's always been about, staying creative, listening to the needs of the patients, and listening to the nursing staff. They're right there, they've got their finger on the pulse, literally in most ways. And they'll let our team know, I think we could use it in this case, or no, it's not appropriate in this case. I think there are very good and clear use cases for VR. In some ways, you don't always want to use VR. It could be something like you said, with, gaming and a screen.
Well, I think this is my favorite interview we've done so far, Will. These stories are so powerful. Wow. It's like,
I think it's really everyone.
he hasn't actually, but
a big reason that we started Arbor was that we wanted to see VR be used for good. And this is just really cool. I mean, this is definitely improving the quality of life for people. I'd like to transition to maybe some of the staff training that you do. Share with us today, what it looks like to train staff in VR.
Sure. So we've had two separate units come to us requesting, actually now it's three units come to us requesting staff VR training. Our psychiatry team, our adaptive care program team, and then most recently our hemodialysis team. And their use cases are all very different. With our psychiatry team, we have patients coming in who, some of them have been Baker acted. I don't know if you guys know what that means or if that's just a Florida term. But essentially, it's if they're having kind of a psychotic episode and they need to be brought into the hospital. For a lot of our patients coming into the psych unit, they have what we call a code bear. So you probably know Nicklaus Children's, our logo is the bear. We have a code, like a hospital-wide code, like code blue, code red. We created code bear, and it's actually now a hospital code that's used all throughout Florida. So all of the other children's hospitals now have code bear too. And code bear is essentially if a patient is having a negative behavioral episode or response to something, they could start to try to harm themselves or harm others. And so we would call a code bear, and typically that patient would be restrained physically and sedated medically. We don't like to call a code bear, essentially. So we created this VR staff training program to try to train staff members on how to notice a code bear earlier. So how do you see these different types of behavioral or different behaviors that you would look out for and kind of the different antecedents, different things that you would do to de-escalate that patient and calm them down so that we don't have to call a code bear? So that was one of the trainings that we created with a virtual reality developer. And essentially the staff put the headset on and they're interacting with an avatar who's getting increasingly agitated. And then they're being graded on their response to that avatar. And we have the ability to kind of modify what the avatar does. So if they're really good at the training and they're noticing everything early, I can make it more difficult for them. And essentially the reason we've done that is because ethically, we can't have staff interacting with a patient, right? That's not how we're going to train staff members. We're not going to agitate the patient and be like, all right, you know, de-escalate them. So we have this way for them to repeat this training. And we have seen, similar to the training that you just brought up, Brad, we have seen that they are getting better over time. So if they continue to do the practice in the VR headset, they do improve. And the skills that they're acquiring, they're learning them faster and sticking with them longer. And we're in the process now, we ran that kind of as a pilot. We're in the process now, 1 year later, of measuring any reduction in the code bears that had to be called as a result of the training. In a similar fashion, we've also created for our psychiatry team room search environments in a VR capacity, so we can hide different things in a virtual room. And then we test the staff on whether they found them. And the things that we're hiding would be things that patients might use for self-harm, again, or harm towards others. So if they caught that there was a pen or a shoelace still on a shoe. And then the other VR training for psychiatry is a patient search. So in a similar fashion, they're interacting with a patient avatar and they have to do a physical pat down of the patient. If a patient's coming into the psych unit and has their favorite hoodie, but that hoodie has, you know, the string, the drawstring, that has to be removed. And all of that is built into the VR staff training.
Wow.
You know, we quote Dr. Jeremy Valenson often from Stanford. And he talks about VR being good for training in things that are difficult, dangerous, or expensive to do in the real world. And the first example you just gave, I mean, it is, how else do you train a staff member to interact with an agitated patient? I mean, it's just a great example of that. I'd love to hear about, you mentioned on that one in particular, I'm sure other of these modules that you are working with content creators. What is your process for getting content developed or created? How have you gone about that?
So, up to now, it's been grant funded. So we operate really on either donations or grants. So our progress on this front has been slower than I would like, largely because we're applying for grants and, you know, we have to wait until that funding comes in or until we get donor funding. Once we have the funding in place, you know, we scope out, you know, which developer we would like to go with. We kind of, you know, we work with the unit staff themselves, and it's been a co-creation effort. So with our adaptive care team and with our psychiatry team, they work with my team and we work with the developer, and we kind of go through, you know, here's our best practice, here's what we do currently, and then we build something tailored to Nicholas Children's.
How has Arbor helped streamline your XR program?
Arbor has helped a lot, to be honest with you. I think we realized, you know, pretty quickly as our program started to expand that we needed a different way of managing things. So I mentioned, you know, I have a couple of technicians who work on my team. They do their rounds every day of the hospital just to make sure all the devices are there, that, you know, that nothing's been lost, everything is charging. But like myself, they can't be everywhere all the time. It can get, you know, a little complicated trying to track everything down. So just from a tracking perspective of where things are and is everything charged, that's helped a lot. From the Arbor side of managing the content and pushing content has helped tremendously because we have so many different use cases. So for the VR staff training, we've taken the APIs from those training modules and siloed them into Arbor. which is great. So when the psychiatry team is doing a training, I can see, all right, they've been using that training module 8 times this week. Fantastic. And being a data person myself, it makes it really easy for me to feed that data upwards to my leadership and say, look, here's the impact we're seeing. In addition to that, I would say one of the things I was really curious about in year one was how much of an impact did we have? And I was estimating, right? Because I said I was there putting headsets on kids. So I'm doing like a tally. Like this week, I reached 18 kids. Fantastic. And I think the first year, we reached maybe 800 patients, you know, with between me and the 3 other ambassadors. To see the actual data from last year, I think it was even maybe 10 months of last year. It wasn't even the full year that we reached 8,000 separate individuals, or, you know, the VR headsets were used 8,000 separate times, maybe multiple times on one patient. That's very powerful for us because we are a, you know, donation sponsorship driven program. That to me is powerful because I can use that data and then scale the program further. Or I can say, look, you know, this is why I need another person to help support the team because these devices are being used so much. So it's actually refined the approach that I take in in kind of determining who and which types of VR headsets we're going to pilot. Because some VR headsets don't go online and you have to go online to link to Arbor. So for the ones that don't have certain capabilities, we've put them on the back burner for now, because having the data coming from the headsets that we have now is so helpful that to bring in another type of headset that doesn't give us that capability, now I'm not interested in those as much anymore because the data is powerful and it's real time. You know, it's great. It's helped a lot.
Well, you know, what's interesting is just hearing this whole, you know, the constraint of the grant funding in a lot of ways, I think has been a huge blessing because it has forced you to get such incredible results. I mean, we have a lot of people we work with that don't have that constraint. And so their results are a little more squishy and you've just got incredibly concrete results.
I think that's just the researcher in me. But my boss, he's the CIO, but he's also a cardiologist by training. And, you know, myself, I did the academic research life for such a long time up until coming to Nicklaus Children. So I think it's just hard to unlearn certain behaviors. So we capture data on all of our programs. We're pretty, you know, disciplined in our approach with piloting, capture a lot of data during the pilot. And then we have different surveys constantly running in the background for each of these different areas.
As we kind of move to a close here, you've had over 8,000 people a year going through VR now, 60% reduction in anxiety and perceived pain in children ahead of surgeries, which is just totally incredible. Dozens of use cases, both with staff and with patients. Like, what's the future for VR at Nicklaus Children's?
I have lots of ideas. I know my team, we're excited, I think, you know, just to see where we can bring this. There's, as I'm sure you guys are aware, there are new types of VR headsets coming out that have amazing functionality. And as I've mentioned, our staff tend to be innovative. You know, they're always coming to us with ideas. So for me, for this year, one of our goals is to kind of continue to expand our clinical use case. So, you know, having patients put headsets on during procedures, seeing the impact of that. I know Mediport insertion is one that's come to us just in the last month. Can we have patients, you know, wearing headsets for Mediport insertion? Another physician came to me recently about using an Apple Vision Pro, the real pricey headsets from Apple, and to use that during his surgery. So not for the patient to wear it, but for the physician himself to wear it to get better visualization of the surgical field. By feeding, you know, the input from a device, a clinical device that he's using, and feeding that into the headset itself. And I know that there are some surgeons who use VR, you know, in other health systems. We've used VR in quite a few ways from a clinical and surgical perspective. So I think for me, it's continuing to scale that. It's continuing to look at, you know, nurse training. I would like for nurse VR training to become mandatory. at Nicholas as part of just our annual curriculum. One of the staff training modules we created was, you know, interacting more effectively with patients with autism, who also tend to be our patients who get a code bear called on them simply because their environment is too overstimulating. So I think that module in particular would be one that I would like all of our staff, you know, from security all the way through to, you know, folks in the cafeteria, to know how to identify if a patient has autism and is having a hard time, and to know what to do in those situations. So yeah, I think, you know, we're excited about the future. Just constantly keeping our minds open to what opportunities are there, and really just listening to our staff and trying to be there to support them and their patients as much as we can.
Such a good approach. And there are so many opportunities. Very last question here. There's been so much just advice sprinkled into this, but if you could go back and meet with Dr. Potter of 2021, what advice would you give her starting out?
That's a good question. I would say, you know, just try not to get too bogged down in all of the details. Try to have fun with it and just be persistent. All like that was the main thing in years probably 1, 2, and 3 was just persistence and meeting the staff and the patients where they're at. You know, it is hard to bring new technology into a space. Not everybody, like you mentioned, not everybody cares for VR. Not everybody wants to bring new technology in. For the most part, you know, everybody's been really supportive. But I think, you know, when folks are really busy and already have so many protocols they have to follow, throwing more work at them is, you know, it can be hard. So my boss is always saying, you know, donut diplomacy, bring lots of donuts, show up, be positive. I have purchased a lot of donuts in my time. And, you know, I'm proud to say, you know, we have a great network now within the hospital of supporters and ambassadors. So yeah, my advice would just be, you know, stay persistent, stay positive, and just, you know, believe in, you know, the technology, which I do. So.
Well, we've heard, this may surprise you, maybe not. We've heard the donut advice many times. I've heard it from stage at VR conferences. I think, yeah.
So that's real. We like empanadas down here in Miami.
But I do think, you know, this has just been so good. And one of the biggest ways I think all of us can move VR forward is by sharing stories like this. You know, I don't know how somebody listens to this and these stories and doesn't get excited about the potential of the future of XR in healthcare. It's just so powerful, so meaningful. So Dr. Potter, we really appreciate your time, and we look forward to chatting again soon.
Likewise. Thank you guys so much. It was great to speak with you.
Man, it was so cool to get those individual stories, powerful stories. And we've got, and I think we kind of chase the big stats, the big ROI, because it's helpful for all of us to push things forward. But it's pretty rare to get those individual kind of life-changing stories. And what's cool is that Nicholas Health has both. They have the big picture stats along with those individual life-change moments.
It's true. You know, the fun thing for us is, you mentioned on the pod, but this is coming full circle. I mean, we started out with seeing their use case, getting excited about it, using it on slides. And I think it's both encouraging now that we're working with them, but also the fact that their use case has only expanded and grown. You know, there's plenty of XR programs that have struggled for one reason or another. But when we hear stories like this, I just think, yeah, XR is here to stay. You know, this is a hospital and a complex that's using it in a variety of ways at scale, thousands of patients, staff. And I think it all starts, though, with a single person with vision who's willing to push this thing forward. And I think a great example, we see it again and again, that it does take somebody with the courage to step up and take a risk and boots on the ground, just make it happen. So kudos to her for doing that. And I hope this inspires some new XR champions out there.
Yeah. An encouragement to anybody thinking or just getting started. We're past the window of, is there the question around just the technology? Like, the technology is proven. We see the results every time we do an interview across every type of industry. And so the intentionality from the very beginning and the willingness to just stick it out, so powerful. Well, as always, we appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us, and make sure you check us out wherever you listen to your podcast. We'll see you next time.